Anyway, I wanted to talk about mindfulness and the role of mindfulness and compassion. And you can see specifically how it relates to the subject of committing to our group effort and committing to practicing together and encouraging others, and so that all of us can practice in a good condition. So, in terms of mindfulness, I read an article recently. Actually, it wasn't an article. It was a correspondence back and forth between Bhikkhu Bodhi, who is a Theravada Buddhist monk in the Sri Lankan tradition, and Alan Wallace, who is a Buddhist teacher in the Tibetan tradition. And it was quite an interesting dialogue they were having, and Alan was raising a lot of the questions that I had had about what mindfulness meant in the different traditions. So basically the discussion revolved around, does mindfulness refer to just bare attention about what's happening, or is mindfulness, does it have a factor of remembering and steering the mind to a certain object? And it could be that in the various traditions there's various definitions. But in the teachings that I received, mindfulness refers much more to the latter thing. There's an element of remembering. Actually, the Tibetan, the Sanskrit word sati, and the Tibetan word drempa, it has the connotation of to remember. Okay? That doesn't mean that you're sitting remembering all sorts of things from the past. You know, I remember my boyfriend in the seventh grade, and you know, it's not referring to that kind of memory. It's referring to a mental factor that pays attention to what's going on now, remembering your values, remembering your practice, remembering your understanding of reality. Okay? I remember one Theravada monk, who's a friend of mine, telling this story, you know, because he was emphasizing this too, that mindfulness isn't just paying attention to what's happening now. You know, it involves paying attention to what's happening now, but it's not just paying attention to what's happening now. Because he told the story about, you know, I think it's a made-up story, but anyway, it works. About somebody, you know, a person leaving their home and telling the gatekeeper, you know, please be very mindful while I'm away from the house. And the gatekeeper said yes. And so the person went out, and then when he came back to the house, he found out that his house had been ransacked. You know, the television was gone, the computer was gone, everything was gone. And he went back to the gatekeeper and said, I thought I asked you to be mindful when I was gone. And the gatekeeper said, oh, I was very mindful. I watched the thief come in. I watched the thief, you know, pick up the television. I noted exactly how he carried the television out and where he put it in his trunk. I did the same for when he went in to take the jewelry and the computer and everything else. I was very mindful. Is something wrong there? Okay? So, does mindful just mean paying attention to what's going on now? You can see from the story it doesn't. It's not just paying attention. It's not just in my mind, oh, I note attachment arising, I note anger arising, I note the intention to speak harsh words, I note the volume of my voice when I'm screaming at that person. You know, I note their facial expression as they are hurt by what I say. Is that mindfulness? No. Okay. So mindfulness isn't just being aware of what's going on, you know, because what use is it? You know, you just have bare attention on your own negativities. But rather, you know, there's this element of remembering our values and our principles and how we want to be. Okay? So today we took the 8 Mahayana precepts. We want to be mindful of our precepts in all of our interactions with people. Okay? Because we're paying special attention today to our mind, to our virtuous intention, integrating it in our life and how we speak and what we do. Okay? So we want to be mindful of how we interact. Are we harming anybody physically? Are we taking what hasn't been given? You know, are we giving off some sexual energy, flirting? Are we telling the truth? Are we intoxicating ourselves by letting the mind go all around the universe? Okay? So mindfulness, you know, implies in the Tibetan tradition that there's something, somewhere that you want to go with your mind. And so you're mindful of that. Even in the practice of the four mindfulnesses, or the four foundations of mindfulness, in the Pali Canon, you know, the Buddha was talking about mindfulness of the body, for example. So we might be mindful of what the body is composed of. So, you know, in our meditation, we note all the various organs of the body. We note their functions. We see what is this body that we're so attached to. So we're mindful of the body. Okay? So it's not just noting the sensations without any kind of evaluation. It's, you know, mindfulness is used to generate some wisdom about what actually is this body that we're so attached to. Okay, so we investigate what the body is. We apply mindfulness in our daily actions as we're moving around. And this is especially important when we're living together in community, and it's mentioned specifically, you know, as part of mindfulness of the body. So, and this is where the role of compassion comes in, because we're aware that we're living together with others. We have a kind, compassionate attitude, so we want to be mindful that we are enacting our kind, compassionate attitude in our interactions with other people, because we are mindful of the chores that we signed up to do. Yeah. And so out of kindness and compassion, not only for the staff of Cloud Mountain that has to pick up after us if we don't show up, but out of kindness and compassion for the other people in the group who are dependent on us, then we remember what our chores are and we do them. Okay? And so doing the chores isn't just, oh, I gotta do this, and I would really rather not. What a drag. Okay, I'll just do it and get it done as soon as possible so then I can go practice the Dharma. Okay, it's not like that. It's, you know, I'm living together with other sentient beings who are kind to me. My being here at Cloud Mountain depends upon all these other sentient beings. You know, nobody's going to have a Dharma course just for me if I'm the only one who shows up. You know, it depends on a group being here. It depends on people having built Cloud Mountain. Depends on the Cloud Mountain staff. Depends on all of us helping each other so that the retreat, you know, goes on smoothly. So being aware of this interdependence and the kindness of others, and then seeing the benefit of cultivating a kind and compassionate attitude ourselves, then we pay attention to what's going on and what we've committed to do, and then we carry it out. And we carry it out with a happy attitude, okay? And so we carry it out like, oh, here is my opportunity to offer service to this group. You know, I'm here, and how many people have been working for years to make this retreat happen? And you're going to say, they worked for years to make this retreat happen? What are you talking about, you know? Because we just got in our car on Friday afternoon and drove down here, you know, and didn't put much energy into the retreat at all. Well, think about it. How long has it taken Dhammadasa to build Cloud Mountain? Yeah? He's basically built it himself with the help of some volunteers. It's taken years to build this. He's been building this place since the early or mid-80s. Well, actually the early 80s. Yeah? Are we aware of that? Are we aware of how many people, you know, helped him in building this place? Yeah? You know, I'm doing this training. Are you aware of how, and I'm doing this teaching and guiding this retreat, are you aware of how many years that I've spent practicing and studying to get to the point where I can offer this? Yeah. Are you thinking of the cooks and the people and how many years of training they've done to be able to offer the service of cooking for us? Yeah. So when we think of it, it's not just that, oh, you know, Friday afternoon at 6 o'clock the retreat starts, but it's rather, you know, so many people have been putting in effort for many decades, you know, to make this retreat happen. So when we are aware of that, you know, and feel a sense of gratitude for it and have a kind attitude, a compassionate attitude towards not only those people, but everybody else together in the group, then, you know, we pay more attention to how we are moving through space and how we relate to the other people in the group and how we do our chores and so on. Okay? And so then our life isn't just, you know, and I talk about this a lot because we often have this tendency of, you know, the meaning of my life is to cross things off my chore list. Okay? How many of us have a list of things we have to do? You know? And your total happiness every day is crossing something off. You know? That is the measure of happiness in the 21st century, is how many things you can cross off your list. Now, is that the meaning of our life? You know, we're all, the only reason we do something is to be able to cross it off our list and have the joy and fulfillment of having one less thing that we have to do. What kind of life are we living if we have that attitude? Yeah, just think about it. I mean, there's no joy in the life that just wants to get things done so they aren't on our list anymore and they aren't weighing over our head. Now, if we change our attitude, and our attitude is one of kindness and compassion, and we are mindful of that attitude, then doing all those chores is something pleasurable, it's something joyful. It's not, oh, I have to do this. It's, this is part of our practice of expressing kindness and compassion and being aware of the our interrelatedness with all the other living beings. Okay? So when you're washing the dishes, don't just think, oh, I have to wash the dishes and then get done with them. Then I can go read a Dharma book. Yeah. But wow, you know, here's all these people who cook for me, whose energy I'm dependent on, who grew the food, you know, and I just show up and have this incredible meal to eat. And now it's my turn to be able to offer service with a happy mind that offers service that supports these people and encourages them in their practice. So I get to wash the dishes. And while I'm washing the dishes, you know, I think that the stuff on the dishes are the defilements of sentient beings, and my soap and my sponge are compassion and wisdom, and with compassion and wisdom I'm clearing off the defilements on sentient beings' minds. No? And then it's like so much fun to wash the dishes. It's not a drag, you know, and you really enjoy it. And you think of who you're washing the dishes with, and you, you know, exude a kind, joyful attitude towards the other person who you're washing the dishes with. And to all the people who are putting the dishes in the bowl, you don't scowl at them like, you know, why'd you make that dish dirty? I have to wash it. You know? And it's like, yes, put it in here. I'm completely happy to do this for you. Okay? Then you wash the dishes. When you're done, your mind is happy. Okay? Isn't that much more valuable than rushing through the dishes with this kind of angry, resentful mind? You know, so you can cross it off, so you can sit down and read a book about compassion. Okay? So this is what mindfulness is all about, okay? It's about remembering these things so we can make our mind happy in the moment that we're doing them. Okay? Mindfulness is also about being aware of how we move through space here together. Now you might have noticed that we all live in, you know, there's groups of people living in different buildings. Now, are you aware of how sound travels in those buildings? Yeah? Are you aware of how you open and close doors? You might be aware of how other people open and close doors. Bang, bang, wham, wham. But are you aware of how you're doing it? Do you care about how you open and close doors and the effect it has on other people? Now think about it. Be aware. Yeah? When we open a door, think you're opening the door to enlightenment for sentient beings. When you close the door, you close it gently. Yeah? You're closing the door to the lower realms. So make your opening and closing of the door part of your Dharma practice. Think about what's important. Do it gently. Do it sweetly. You know? If you pay attention to these external things, your mind will follow along and be gentle and be sweet. Okay? If what happens, you know, when we're in a hurry, when we're not paying attention, yeah, when our mind is elsewhere, we open the door and we close the door. And we aren't even aware that we did it. And what kind of energy are we putting into our common environment by opening and closing the door like that? Yeah. What are we expressing of our internal mental state by how we open and close the door? Do we want our mental state to continue to be like that? So mindfulness here means, you know, I'm mindful of my internal mental state and transforming it into one of kindness and then having that come out or be expressed by how I open and close doors. Okay? The energy I put into the environment. We're all aware, aren't we, of how people open and close doors. It gives a certain feeling, doesn't it? Okay, mindfulness and compassion together also apply to how we move through space. Okay. You can watch sometimes, and we can tell in ourselves what's going on in the mind by the way people walk. And you can tell that some people, when they're walking, their body is here, but their mind is already at the place where they're going. Okay? And you can see it because they're not being at all aware of how their body's being moving through space because their mind is intent on getting over there to where they think they need to be. And of course, once they get there, their mind is on the next thing that they're supposed to be doing. So they're always leaning forward. They're walking with this certain kind of rush, you know, and intentness, looking down, you know, and not really being present to what's going on around them. Yeah, they don't see, you know, here the sunlight filtering through the trees. Or they don't see the bugs on the ground that they're stepping on or nearly stepping on. Or they don't see the people around them and feel the presence of the people around them who are walking by them on the path because their mind isn't there. Their mind is where they're going. Okay? And so there's no joy in how they're walking from here to there because their mind is saying, I gotta be there, I gotta be there, I gotta be there. You know? It's not saying, I'm not gonna be home. It's saying, I gotta be there. So try, you know, paying attention to how you're walking and walking with grace. And I don't mean, you know, kind of ballroom dance grace. I'm talking about, you know, the grace of somebody who is mindful. You know, the grace of somebody who is in this present moment expressing their kindness and compassion through the energy that they give out in the environment by how they walk. Okay? We're keeping silence, but, you know, even when you speak, yeah, if you're asking questions, or when you go back home when you're speaking, be aware of how you're speaking. What are you saying? And, you know, here, keeping silence, we certainly notice all of our impulses to speak, don't we? Yeah? We're in the middle of something, and like the intention, you know, the intention comes up to speak, and before we know it, the words are out of our mouth, and we've broken the silence. And we've just assumed that, of course, the other person wants to hear what we have to say. Well, maybe the other person is trying to be mindful themselves, and maybe they're thinking about something that's important for them, and are breaking up the silence intrudes upon that and distracts them from it. Okay? Or maybe when we're at home, we aren't careful of the volume of our voice, you know, and we're trying to communicate something important, but we're screaming it. And can the other person really hear it when we're screaming it? Or be aware of how we speak in our body language, because we might use a low voice, but we have ways of telling other people with our low voice and our body language that we're angry also. You know? So how are we communicating what we have to say to the people around us? Are we taking care with that? No? Or are we just kind of dumping our feelings out on them in any old way? You know, without a lot of awareness or care. So this whole thing of mindfulness is imbued with care for the environment, for the other sentient beings living in it. And we want our way of being in the world to, you know, our body and speech to reflect the compassion that's going on in our mind. And so we have to make sure that there's compassion and kindness in our mind. And so that's why we start out every day with our motivation. Remember, today as much as possible, I'm not going to harm anybody. Today as much as possible, I'm going to be a benefit. And today I'm going to hold my long-term motivation of attaining enlightenment for the benefit of all beings as the most precious thing. You know, and act from that motivation as much as possible. Okay? So we remind ourselves of that every morning. Throughout the day we try and come back to that. And then we review it in the evening and check up and see how we've done. Yeah? And then make a determination for the next day to keep on practicing that way. And we will get things done probably just as quickly, just as efficiently by having mindfulness and compassion as we will by having self-centeredness and rushing. Okay? Because I don't know about you, but when I rush, I tend to forget things. You know, because I'm so focused on being where I'm not that I get out the door, which I've slammed, and then get halfway down the path on which I've ignored all the other beings that are there, and then remember that I forgot to take something out of my room. Okay, so I have to go back and get it. Yeah. And so then, even in more of a hurry to get where I'm going, you know, to ignore people even more. Whereas if we, from the beginning, you know, we kind of pause, do I have what I need? How am I going to move through space to get from here and there? Yeah? Then it's just much more in tune with the environment, and we affect our environment and the people in it in a very constructive way. Okay? So this is all part of practice. Sometimes We have the idea that practice is what we do on the cushion, you know, and we have these, only what we do on the cushion. Of course, practice is what we do on the cushion, but we think it's only what we do on the cushion, yeah. And we have all these idealistic fantasies about doing long retreat, you know, until we get to the cushion, and then after 5 minutes, our back hurts, our neck hurts, our knees hurt. You know, we're squirming, we're dissatisfied. And then we start planning the next retreat we're going to do in our meditation during this retreat. So that's not what it's all about. Yeah? It's really about learning the Dharma and putting it into practice in every aspect of our life, you know, as much as we can. And so we keep trying to come back to this, trying to remember it. Of course we don't do it perfectly. It's a big training, but we keep trying. Okay? And if we do, we can notice the improvement. And you can see that, you know, when you see people who have been practicing a long time. Okay? And I mean practicing, not pretending to practice. Okay? I know people ask me how long have I been practicing, and I say, well, I've been pretending to practice for X number of years, you know, because a lot of my quote-unquote practice is pretending to practice, and that's why you don't see the results in how I act, or rather you do see the results of pretending to practice but not really practicing, okay, but, you know, people who have really taken some time to train their mind, then you see that result and how they live their life. Yeah. And you can notice that. And that, you know, this is very much what we're trying to do. So it's not a thing of, you know, judging somebody else or judging ourselves. It's we're all involved in this process of training. And so let's help each other do it. Okay, any questions or comments about this? Yeah.
Could you say a little more about pretending to practice?
Okay, a little bit more about... About pretending to practice. Okay, could I say a little bit more about that? Yeah, pretending to practice is, you know, we show up for meditation session, we sit there on the cushion, we're doing, you know, Om Mani Padme. Why is that person next to me switching their positions so much? They're so restless. Damn it, I wish they'd sit still so I could concentrate. Oh, I remember now what my brother said to me 15 years ago. That was not very kind of him to say. I really have to talk to him about this. You know, I haven't forgotten in 15 years. And I really got to do something about it. You know? Okay, that's pretending to practice. And in daily activities, pretending to practice, oh, then we try and be these very perfect practitioners. I am the most mindful practitioner. Hold the door open for you. Please. Please, may I serve you this cup of tea? Oh, my teacher asked me to bring them tea. Get out of the way, I'm bringing them tea! Okay. Yeah, that's pretending to practice. Oh, I want to wash the teacher's dishes. But not your dishes. And I only want to wash the dishes of the highest teacher. You know? This kind of rubbish. Yeah.
That's the first time I've heard that particular mindfulness, and I really like that.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a place for us to read some more about that in detail? Because, you know, most of the things I've been supposed to learn.
I'm thinking. I mean, some of the teachings in the Theravada tradition talk about mindfulness in this way, but they, I was really emphasizing the compassionate aspect of mindfulness. I think you're giving me more work to do. I have to write something about it.
It's a very different take.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a different take, and it's one you know that I haven't heard expressed exactly like that from my teachers, because they haven't always used the word mindfulness in that, but it's very much the way that we are trained. You know, Lama Yeshe used to emphasize this quite a bit, and I remember him so clearly saying one day, you know, coming into the Sangha about this, and he held up this mala and he said, you know, every day your duty is to benefit sentient beings. And he took his mala and he's, you know, going through the beads, and he said, oh, you think I'm saying, oh, manapinyam, you're so holy. But actually, you should be saying, I am the servant of others. You know? And whoa, I remember that one. Yeah? Because he used to always call us on how, you know, oh, we pretend to do this kind of practice and that kind of practice, but then we show up late for community practice, or we don't take care of each other, or we criticize each other. He used to really call us on that. And so that was, you know, kind of where it came from. Mm-hmm. And I know, you know, when I'm around monastics, for example, in the Chinese tradition, you know, the Chinese monastics are very well trained, most of them. And there's a certain gentleness, and you can see mindfulness in the way that they interact with each other and take care of each other. And, you know, I had the fortune to be able to train with them when I took my full ordination. And then I have some Chinese karma. And, you know, so I hang out with them whenever I can. And then you find you're naturally becoming like that when you're around people who practice in that way. Okay? But as a group, we need to create that energy. It's difficult as one person, you know, to make the group do that. But the group has to participate. Then everybody goes, oh yeah, I can do that too.